All right. Hope everybody's ready for this one because I got one of my favorite people from the UK, one of the nicest guys, shrewdest businessman that you probably could ever do business with, and he's got great stories for us. Comes from a legendary name, a legendary family, and I'm glad that he's joining us today after a great night for him and his football team back in the UK. Congratulations, Mr. Joey Pyle. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure, mate. It's my pleasure to be here. It was a good night last night. Chelsea won.
When I was seeing the results 2-1, I said, "Wow, it must have been some tight game for them."
Did you know something? We played well. We played well, but we robbed the game in a little bit. You know.
I like when you admit that.
Yeah, but they had a penalty, which shouldn't have been a penalty, I don't think. But they missed the penalty, and that would have been 2-0 at half-time. So they missed the penalty, so they've gone in, and it's 1-0, and we've come out, and we scored 1-1, and then we got a winner, you know, with a few minutes to go. So, you know. But we're playing them in the Champions League final in 3 weeks' time, which is a massive game. Which is absolutely...
Yeah, I got a phone call early this morning from a friend of mine in Scotland, but he's English, and he told me something about Turkey, that the pandemic's getting really bad there, and that's where the game was supposed to be held. Am I correct?
Yeah, you're correct. And it was funny, because last week, a few of us were talking, and I said to a couple of my guys, should we get out there for the match, for the game? And a couple of guys have been, yeah, we might sneak out there, you know, try and find a way to get out there, but... The way it's looking at the moment is, you know, what's the point? You're going to go all the way to Turkey and sit in a kebab shop and watch the game on the TV. You might as well do it in the UK. So, you know, yeah. But now they're even talking about possibly moving it to the UK, the final, because it's two British teams. So,
That's what I heard. That's what my friend was calling me about, saying that they might move it to the UK and it would be massive there. They said,
yeah.
So this game would be massive.
But, you know, I'll tell you, I said to someone, I said, we can have it in a farm field. We're still going to win.
That's a true fan.
We're still going to batter them, you know what I mean? We're still going to...
Well, you know what? That's a true fan. That's all you're worried about. People want to, you know, they like it to be in their hometown, their home country, at their home pub. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was a big sporting day as well yesterday, because we had another British boxer, Billy Joe Saunders, fighting Canelo in Texas last night.
Yeah, so that was a big fight for you guys, huh?
Yeah, so like I was watching it. It came on about 4:15. I was hardly awake.
I know it's been a rough week for you. I've been talking to you. You haven't got too much sleep yourself.
Nah, you know, baby. He done well, Billy Joe, but that Canelo is he's a middleweight. And he punches like an heavyweight.
It's like a heavyweight, right? I've seen the highlights of that.
Yeah, he fractured his skull. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I didn't hear that. Wow.
Yeah, well, his eye socket was fractured, which is basically a fractured skull.
Yeah, it is. Because it is part of the skull. Absolutely.
You know. Wow.
So this happened in last night's fight. I didn't know that.
Billy Joe was doing okay. Our guy, he was doing okay, and then but Canelo, he was throwing these right uppercuts. He's coming in bang, bang with these uppercuts all fight. And they must have watched the fight beforehand or watched Billy Joe's fights. And his trainer gone and spotted something with these uppercuts. And he caught him a couple of times, and then one shot, bang, hit him. And the second it hit him, his eye just went bang. It just swelled immediately, and a lot of guys are saying Billy Joe quit. But if I would have been in the corner, I would have pulled him out, because then once you got that injury, if he would have boxed for one more round, his eye would have probably come out twice the size. You know, and to box with a fractured skull, that's not brave. That's insanity. You know, you can't fight if your skull's cracked in four or five places around there. You know.
Well, you know better than anybody, your father being a great boxer himself, and you yourself being a great boxer for your weight class. And, of course, we know of the street fighting days, your father as well as you, that your vision is most important, regardless of anything else. And you know, you also you don't want to hurt the boxer. By keeping him in there, that's supposed to be your mate. That's supposed to be your pal. You know, you're supposed to take care of him and watch after him.
Yeah, you know, the corner had no choice. And it's, I actually had years ago, I had the same injury. I had exactly the same injury, and it was
you had your skull fractured in a fight.
Yeah, but it was a street fight.
My segue. That was supposed to be that.
Yeah. But and I was driving down the road, and a guy put in the UK we used to have things called a grit box for if the snow people got the grit out and threw it on the roads, okay. And this idiot had put the grit box in the middle of the road. So I'm driving, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and I've had to stop the fucking car. And I've gone to the guy, Coy, you're sensible, aren't you? You know, I said to him, what a clever guy you are, you know what I mean? And I've had to pull the grip box. And as I'm pulling it, he's run over, and he's hit me with a knuckle duster.
Oh, my God.
And I've gone, back, and I've gone down on one knee, right, and I've jumped back up, and... You know, he's hit me again, and I had to cheat, if you know what I mean. So I ended up winning.
there's no rules in street fighting. You know that, right? There's no cheating, especially not only did he jap you, what we call brass knuckles, you guys, the dusters, he shouldn't have hit you with that on top of japping you. So the rules are off the table.
It was lucky, you know, we're scrapping in, and you know, and it was just lucky. I cheated, I'll just say that, and I ended up winning. I went back, and I phoned my father up, and I said, Dad, you better come and see me. I said, something's happened, and he come back, and my eyes was out here, and it was painful, really. I'm telling you, it was so painful. So I know the injury, what he had. You know, within about 3 hours, it was like that. And they said, go to the hospital, Joe. And I went, I can't go to the hospital because the other guy's probably in the hospital. Do you know what I mean? And the cops are called.
He's probably a little worse off than you.
Yeah, I said, the cops might be in the hospital. So I had to sit it out for about 3 days. You know what I mean? You know?
Yeah. You didn't even get medical attention.
Wow. All I got was half a bottle of vodka.
I love it. That's the answer to everything in the UK.
It's funny. That's what I say when people say, you know, well, if you got the flu, I say, we'll have a Guinness and some scotch. have a few vodkas. You know what I mean? You know.
Oh, that's great. What'd you take for the pain? I had half a bottle of Absolut in the freezer. I guess that was the answers then.
Well, it might not get rid of the pain, but you'll forget about the pain.
Yeah, it's going to numb it for a little while. See, I'm not a big drinker, but I was always told when I was getting tattoos, you know, alcohol thins the blood.
So, I didn't know that.
Yeah, alcohol thins the blood, definitely. You're a pretty good drinker there, Joey. From our conversations,
I don't drink a lot.
You're a good drinker. I never hear you talk about bad alcohol. Not like me. You're not out at 3 o'clock in the afternoon drinking pints. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, I like, and even when I come home in the evening, I like sitting down and having maybe a couple of beers or a couple of glasses of wine. For us, it's a way of relaxing.
The last time you were with your lady, and you were having a couple of glasses, I think, of wine.
Yeah, you know, some guys come home and have a spliff. You know, I don't smoke. You know what I mean? So to me, it's a glass of wine or a couple of beers, and it just it just relaxes you, for
the gentlemanly. That's a gentlemanly way. You're not at the pub making a fool of yourself.
No, if I'm in a pub and I've drunk too much, I go home.
Right.
You know, it's as simple as that.
But you know, you were raised the right way because we're going to get into that anyway. You know about that. You're not these guys that. Listen, you know a lot of you UK guys got hard heads because you like going down into them pubs and hoping. You just go down looking for a fight and a drinking match breaks out. That's what happens with you guys. Most of you guys go looking into the pub looking for a fight and then a drinking match winds up happening, you know? So how it is down there, especially when you got two teams in your country that are playing against each other. Man, those pubs, I've seen videos. Wow.
Yeah, it is. You know, there's a lot of. It's territorial football. Like I support Chelsea because I grew up in the area.
Right.
I grew up in like you know Tooting area, which is like 4 mile away. So Chelsea's my team.
Gotcha.
You know, and when another when if we're playing Arsenal or Tottenham, and if 5,000 of their supporters are coming into our area. And they want to take the piss. You know what I mean? They want to smash the area up. They want to, you know, they want to spray graffiti. They want to do all that. And it's like, you know, this is our area. You can't do this in our area. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
And it's gone on for years and years, the football stuff. You know, I'll stay out of that because it's bullshit. Really, it's all bullshit. You know, but mainly
a lot of guys take it seriously, Joe. I got a phone call from a few of my friends, and. And I can actually call them friends. One in Scotland, one in England, and they're all rooting for. They were rooting with you. They were going with Chelsea. But I know some like Manchester United. There's, you know, you've got a lot of teams down there in the UK. And what is it? The scarf, right? You all wear the scarf, right? Everybody, and it's got the logo, the flag of the team that represents the organization.
You used to, but then what happened was like when I was a kid. In the 80s, and you're going to an away match. Say we're going to Cardiff or we're going to Liverpool, right? We stopped wearing the colours because we the police. Do you know what I mean? If we got the blue and white colours on, the police know we are straight away. So people stopped you wearing the colours, and guys start and then what they used to call the casuals come in. And guys used to go in, they used to wear like, you know, used to wear feeler tracksuits and used to wear, you know, used to go fight with bloody, you know, $1,000 worth of tracksuits on, you know. You know? And it become like Chelsea, you know, Stone Island. Have you ever heard the make Stone Island?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the guys wear Stone Island. And then it become a thing like, if you saw a guy with colours on, he was a civilian. You leave them alone.
Gotcha.
You know, because you might have a dad with two kids, and the two kids have got West Ham tops on or Liverpool tops on, and they're all like, they're civilians. They're not the type of guys who are coming to have a fight. You know, you were in them days, you generally knew, you knew that. The gangs knew who the other gangs were to come to a fight. And a lot of the fights were made over the phone beforehand. They said, we'll meet you 1 mile from the ground. You know, you bring your top boys, we'll bring our top boys, no weapons, and we'll have a proper punch up.
I've learned a lot of, you know how I adore the UK. I can't wait to get there when my book releases. And but now you're taking me to, and we've had many conversations, me and you. You're taking me to another whole territory. I'm glad that my supporters and listeners are getting to hear this. I have no idea that's how these guys did it. Stone Island's a big brand here in New York. It's very expensive. A lot of people I know ain't going to fight in Stone Island. I can tell you that. You know, $300 for a pair of jeans, $400 for a hoodie. Nobody's going to fight with that in American dollars. So I don't know too many people that are going to fight in those clothes out here. But yeah, I didn't know that. So you—that's how you sold them apart.
You know? Yeah, huh? you know, you used to get like, you know, Tacchini, Sergio Tacchini,
Sergio Tacchini.
Yeah. And I've still got some of my old stuff now. I've still got a couple of feeler tops and Sergio Tacchini, Tacchini,
yeah, yourself. Yeah, Sergio Tacchini. That was in the '80s. We had we call them parachute suits, sweatsuits.
Yeah,
they were called Todd Ones. Those are the originals. And then the Italian brand came out, Sergio Tacchini. Now, Sergio Tacchini was like polo shirts, like tennis wear. But they made these amazing tracksuits with colors on them and like different brands, like branding, like signs, signatures, a fan of colors. Now, you're talking about 1988. These sweatsuits were $220.
Yeah, they were expensive.
City line. I used to sell them in City Lines, Bob's Sneaker Corner. Shout out to Bob's Sneaker Corner, Robert Jr. He's in the UK now. Shout out to him. Great guy. His family, great family. They own the mom and pop sneaker store in my neighborhood. They took care of the whole neighborhood. But yeah, they had the Sergio Tacchini's. And now you're talking about 1989, $220, $230, $250 American dollars for a Sergio Tacchini outfit. Like the Todd ones were first, then the Sergio Tacchini, and Fila has lasted the whole time. Fila, I still wear Fila Velour. I got a Fila Velour outlet out by me. That's the only place that got them, and they actually sell the ones that aren't baggy. I mean, aren't tight fitted, that are nice fitted. So I got back wearing overlaw suits again.
We used to like the velour ones. You know the velour, like the velvet, the velour.
Yeah, that's the only one
that I wear. Yes. Yeah. That's weird. And we used to have like the Lacoste as well, Lacoste track suits.
That's, you know what? I'm going to show you something funny because I just took it out. I wore a green one. I wore a green one the other day on the show. And I was going to wear the red, the orange today, but it got too nice in New York. That's the Lacoste.
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny. I can't believe you just said that. I took it out to wear it today.
It
was too warm. I was going to the cemetery down in Brooklyn, and it wasn't as warm as I thought. It's funny you just said that, the Lacoste. That's so weird. But, yeah.
That's what we all wore when we went to punch-ups. That's what we – it started off when I was a young kid, and we was all what they called skinheads. We were all like skinheads, like in the UK. And we used to go to matches in Dr. Martin boots.
That's expensive stuff, man.
Yeah, we used to go with steel toe caps on. And then they banned you from going to football matches with steel toe caps on.
Right.
You couldn't wear these Dr. Martin boots with steel toe caps, like army boots. So, and then the skinheads went out and other crazies come in. And then, you know, mods come in, people with over mods, people dressing up like that. But that's how they used to dress. Do you know, there's a funny thing and all at Chelsea, they actually put the fans behind an electrified fence.
No way. An electrified fence.
Yeah. They actually, an electric fence, we was all behind. Because everyone kept jumping over the fence and running on the field to have a puncher.
These are Churchill rules. Churchill was still in touch. I mean, an electrified fence at a soccer, at a football, let me disrespect the name, a football game, as they say in the UK. Wow.
Yeah, electrified fence. We were stuck behind.
Well,
we couldn't jump on
that. I was hearing some bad stories back in the skinhead days because they were here. Actually, where I am now, where my friends and I, guys, that gentlemen that with now are down in the village, that's where the skinheads used to hang out. Nobody liked the skinheads, but they were wearing Doc Martens. They weren't fighting in them. A pair of good Doc Martens go for about $250. Nobody's wearing Doc, but they did dress like that. They wore actually Kanye West actually made a big deal. It's like the fighter pilot coach, like with the pocket on the arm.
The green with the orange on the inside.
Yeah, right, with the orange on the inside. Yeah, so we were, and they would listen to the thrashing music where you jump in a circle and you're beating each other up and. You can't even understand the words. Guys just yelling and screaming into the microphone. So
when I was young, it was like the skinhead movement was. It wasn't like it was like over in America, like it got to all that type of music. We was like we used to listen to what was called ska music, and it was a band called Manners, Madness, and Bad Manners, and they were all in the charts. They were all. Popular bands. The Specials was number one. You know, it was like everyone was in the late 70s, early 80s in the UK. Everyone was either into punk, skinhead, ska, or a mod. And you know, everyone was into that. And you know, and usually get battles with the mods versus the skinheads and the mods versus the bikers.
You know? Right. I mean, I remember the punks and the skinheads. We used to call punk rock, which was a little bit lighter. And then you had the skinheads, which was the hardcore, which, you know, they ended up being turning into that group that I would not
I never liked all that shit, to tell the truth. It was because I was about 12, 13, in them days, all my mates had. You all had cropped hair.
Right.
You know, everyone had cropped hair. So, I'd go to school and everyone had a number one or a number two, like all the way across, you know. So like when I was a kid, before that, they used to take me to the barbers and my dad or my mum would take me and they'd give me what they call a college boy haircut. you know, and it was, you know, it was just a smart air cut, you know.
Parted on one side and flopped over.
Yeah, you know. But then everyone started cropping their hair, and, you know, it was just, you know, it was good times. It was good times. Like a lot now, they associate skinheads as being racist.
Right. That's what I was going to say, because they turned that style and used it towards, I guess, the neo-Nazi movement.
Yeah.
Which I don't really talk about or get involved with. But yes, that's what they associate. Eventually, associated it with it in this country when the gang, like I said, they used to be in the village. So when it separated from that, and the hip hop and everything else got big, they grew a home with that neo-Nazi look and just used it and used that with their movement. Now, I don't know how or why that's where it came from, because the UK is supposedly where it started. You guys brought that style to light. The bands, the Misfits. I was just actually thinking of the music groups I used to play at CBGB's, and back in the 70s and 80s, like you're talking about a little bit before my time. But that style came from the UK, the punk, the skinhead look, and because the Doc Martens are, you know, from England. That's from the UK, from Europe over there. So, but they adapted that style and used it after the good days, as we were called. I call them the Stoop days. Where when you got into a fight in the streets, you shook the guy's hand, 2 days later you were friends, and that's all it was, a little dust up. You know what I mean? Which, in the UK as well, in America, those days don't exist anymore.
Not nowadays with mobile phones and all this crap about he disrespected me. And listen, if a man disrespects you properly, you know, it's a problem. But some people talk about disrespect now over nothing. You know, it's like over absolute stupidness. You know,
I'm glad you're saying that, because that's like one of the biggest things right now where people take as a disrespect and call a disrespect.
Yeah, it's, you know, when you've been involved in a life, you know the rules, and you know what you can do, and you know what you can't do, and you know what when a man's punking you out. You know when a man's taking the piss, what we call taking the piss.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And like, you know, if I was out drinking with my pals and what you call a civilian bumped into me and spilt his drink over me, and then he just, you know, I'd go, it's okay. Look at that, he's a civilian. You know, I'd let him go. You know, if the guy bumped his drink over me and said some harsh words and pushed me in, it's a different matter. But just something saying like that, I'd go, no, like, I'd let him go, because I know if I have a fight with that guy, what the end result's going to be. The end result's going to be we are going to win. And we might do him some serious fucking damage. And he's a civilian, he's a straight goer, so he's going to run to the cops.
Right, you're going to jail. You know that better than anybody. You expect a civilian to call the cops. And I try to explain that to people. You can't be mad when you have the cops called on you and that guy was a civilian.
No. I've said that all my life to people. That guy grassed me up. That guy was a straight goer. What we call a straight goer. You know what I mean? I said, he was a straight goer. I said, you're the idiot. What do you expect when you threaten him and his wife and his kids, and you threaten him? What do you expect him to do? He's not a tough guy. He can't go to a crew or nothing like that. The only crew he can go to is the cops. So don't moan when you're sitting in prison. You know what I mean? It's your fault. You're the fault.
Another old timer told me, you know, I'm all about the social club scene. I grew up in social clubs. And another thing I learned in the social club, an old timer told me, we call them 9-to-5ers. So, you know, civilians. But if we're associates, we're actually civilians ourselves. So we would call them guys 9-to-5ers, civilians. Mm-hmm. And he goes, what does a civilian do? He goes to work 9-to-5, right? And then what does he do? He pays his taxes. What does he pay his taxes for? He says, the guy told me, you think any of these bums in here paying taxes? He pays his taxes that fund the police to do their job. So if you go and you crack this guy's head open, who is he supposed to call? The guys that he pays. He pays the police. So that's to be at your doorstep. Now, you get to evolve with a guy who thinks he's a street guy, or tells you he's a tough guy, or he went to jail and he's done this and he's done that, and he's on the computer talking about how he's a gangster, a gang member, and he's this and he's that. And then he calls the cops on you, then you know that there's a little something wrong in the universe. You know what I mean? That's the difference.
Yeah. You know,
Joe College, 9-to-5er, Mr. Civilian, whoever you want to call, they pay taxes for a reason. They get beat up or jumped or harassed. They go to the cops. And the guy told me, and this was a street guy, stand-up guy. He says, I expect him, if I cracked his head open, for him to go to the cops. I expect the cops to be at my door.
Yes. It's your fault.
Right. It's your fault. He's supposed to do.
But it's also a time that I've had it in my life as well. Sometimes we can all lose our temper. We can all lose our temper and stuff
that
like
happens.
That. But I say to people, I go, like, you've got to remember, if I'm working with these guys, I'm working with guys and people are working with me, I've got a responsibility. If I get in a beef with some fucking arsehole civilian, it's their beef as well. It's not because they're with me. So I've got a responsibility not to do that. You know what I mean? And you know, like a little example, a few years ago, I'm driving down the road and a guy's on my arse. He's on my bumper. He's literally on my bumper. Like, you know when they're hogging behind in the car?
That's it.
Yeah. So I'm looking in the mirror. I'm driving like that. Bang! I've hit the brakes. I've lost my temper. I've hit the brakes and he's gone like that. Now he's shouting and screaming out the window to me, oh, I'm going to kill you. Oh, he's doing all this to me. And fucking all this and out the window. So I pulled over the side of the road. As I pulled over, whomp, I jumped out of the car and I ran at him. Right? And then he's jumped back in his car and he's shut the door like that. I've bang and I've punched the window. I haven't put the window through. And then he's gone, I've got your number plate. I'm going to have you nicked. I'm going to have you arrested. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And I'm raging. I'm absolutely raging. Right? Now, I've lost it. Right? I want to literally put my hand through the window and grab his throat like that and pull him out of the car and bite his face off. But I realised in the end, it's the wrong move. You know, when I was about 17, 18, 19, maybe I would have made a mistake. But when I got older, I just looked at him like that and I just went, he was a tough guy just a minute ago.
Well, there is a few of those guys. Listen, even though they're civilians, doesn't mean that you can't, a few don't deserve beatings. Because they act, if you want, like I tell people all the time, right? It's great to talk like a gangster. It's great to be a tough guy with your voice and on the computer. But when now you're not on the computer and now you're standing in front of the person, it's a lot harder to be that gangster. It's a lot harder to be that tough guy. So yeah, that guy was riding your tail. That guy was bumper to bumper with you, playing tough guy. You jumped out of the car. He got a little, you know what happened? He got life back in him. And it got drawn right back out of him again. He said, holy shit, this guy's going to punch me in my face. I can't act like a tough guy with him. And there's civilians that are like that. They'll push. And then what happens? They find out they pushed the wrong guy. And then what do? They got to call 911.
Yeah, they're going to go. You know, it's tough nowadays.
That's just the way the world is everywhere, Joey. Not the UK. It's in America as well. Guys want to play tough guy. And like I say, it's great to play gangster on the computer. It's great to talk about it. But now you're put out in Front Street to do it. It's a whole different ballgame. And that person, remember what Tyson said? One of Tyson's best lines ever, because you're a boxing man yourself. Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah, right? It's true.
In any aspect of your life, you can use that. From the boardroom, to the boxing ring, to the street, to anywhere. Everybody always has these big plans until they get in front of somebody and they find a hole in that plan or whatever it is, you know, whatever they can. You know what I mean? It's always a plan. But then you throw the guy off when you jumped out of the car and he's seen that you weren't just going to let him, you know, push you around. As what he was trying to do, riding your tail like that, you know?
And then he wants to bring the cops on you.
Yeah. And the best is, he does what we call here the show and tell. He takes the phone out. Like, look, I got them. Like, all right, so does everybody else. They're right here. I got calling 911 right now.
But that's what you got to be careful of, you know. But as you get older, you learn to adapt.
You know what? That's the segue I was looking to get into, because I want to talk about your father a little bit. Now, I've known some people that known your father. I didn't know him well, but I knew his reputation. He was still alive, and I was old enough to know him. He was here in America for a while, had a lot of friends in movie business, very close with a few organized crime families. But your father was called in America, as we knew him, as truly the one and only person they've ever called the Godfather of England. That is what we knew him as before me and you became pals. I read things about him. But he was known, and this is why I have so much respect for you, because I can see how he raised you, how level-headed you are. Because a lot of guys in his position, where he was a legitimate businessman, but he was also considered a street guy in the rackets, he would get in the middle. There was a part in a movie about the crazed life when the organized crime members came to the UK. And it looked like the crazed were the ones that were kind of working with them and making the introduction. And the truth of the matter was, your father was the mediator. He was the guy that was in the middle, making sure business was being done, money was being made, not destruction. And he would keep the craze away. Not that he was enemies with them. Your father was, you know, not best mates with them, but he knew the craze. And your father was that kind of gentleman. And he wasn't a man where people would be like, ah, whatever. He was a legitimate boxer in his own right, legitimate as in a professional and amateur. He was a legitimate street tough guy. And he was a legitimate guy as well in the rackets. So people took and respected what he said. And that's something that I seen in the movie that I know not to be true, that it wasn't the craze. That was your father that mediated that whole situation with, you know, Cosa Nostra from New York to the UK back when that all happened.
Yeah, no, you know, it's true. The craze were tough kids. But in the West End in them days, it was my father and another family he was working with, my dad, and they were like partners. And it was the Cray twins were one off. They were twins to start off with. You know, I've said this
before. Well, okay, go all the way to the top floor with those guys.
Yeah, you know, but it's like people just sat me like, you know, Joe, what was the attraction with the twins? And I said, well, can you imagine walking into a bar now, and you got two guys who look exactly the same, dressed like Al Capone, both acting like, you know, both standing there like they're about 20 guys all standing around and like that. When they take their coat off, they're grabbing their coat. When they light a cigarette up, someone's going like that. I said, you're going to look and you're going to go like, you know, but the Crays were, you know, you can't deny they were two tough guys, but they were crazy guys. And you know, and that's why they spent the rest of their life in prison. That's why they all died in prison, every single one of them. You know, they just went out and they done bits of work when they shouldn't have been doing bits of work. They had the reputation. People were scared of them. People were worried. They had 1,001 punks around them.
But why they had 20, 30 guys. I heard they had a ton of guys in the UK.
Yeah, you know, everywhere they went, they always had loads of guys with them. And it was like, you know, when the mob come over, you know, and I think if I'm correct, I think it was after the Cuban thing got shut down. And so all of a sudden, they've lost a lot of money in Cuba, Castro. So now they're looking at where's the next Cuba? So it was, you know, Europe, London. You know, so the guys who was with Lansky in Cuba, some brothers, they come over to London. And they set up a couple of casinos in London for a few connections and stuff like that. But you think about it, you've got people like my father who were businessmen.
Correct.
Sure, they were tough guys, but they thought about business first and they stayed in the background. You know, they didn't want to be in newspapers. They didn't want to walk up and down the road and everything else. And then you've got guys like the Crays who are in newspapers every week. Oh, I just got to not guilty. It was like John Gotti type of thing. And, you know, Teflon Don. You know, they're in newspapers and everything. Are you telling me the guys from America are going to come out and go, well, let's have a chat with them? I should imagine the guys we're talking about, like Lansky and people like that, would want to be like, let's stay a million fucking miles away from
exactly,
them.
You're exactly right. Wherever there's people like that, we want to be on the other side of town. That's exactly what was their MO after Cuba coming into the UK. You're exactly right.
You know, and because of the Reggie and Ronnie were working with my dad and his other family, and, you know, and they had a lot of business interests. It was intermingled with many, many business things. And you got to admit, they were friends as well from a young age, from when I was in prison for skipping national service. And so, you know, really, me dad and Johnny and that, just give them a few quid to keep them sweet. You know what I mean? They're our friends. You know, we could be nasty and say, stay out the club, don't come down here anymore, and be nasty about it. But that causes bad blood, you know. So when you're working with another family, you just go like, well, I'll tell you what, look, there's a piece of the pie for you. Let's keep the peace, let's keep it sweet, and everyone's earning, everyone's having a good time, you know. And that's where it was. But but they didn't deal with a craze.
That's where I knew. I mean, I knew they threw it in the movie wrong. I did a lot of reading, and you don't. We talk about you, but we don't really talk about your father or anything like that. When me and you have our conversations, but I know the type of businessman your father was, and the way now that you do things and the way you speak, you could tell. Like, you were a street kid, but you came from a father who did business like that. He was more of the mediator between the Cosa Nostra and the Crazed Crew, where it was like, you know what? There's an easy way to do this. This is their city as well as mine, as now you guys are looking to do business here. There's no reason for us to be batting, knuckling, or doing anything else. We give them a little cut in the pie. We keep them out in the trouble and riffraff out, and we continue doing business. And that was something your father came up with.
That's exactly how it happens, you know. And it my father was always, it's better to make friends than make enemies.
Yeah.
You know, because you know, yourself, when you're up on the street, when you're having beefs and all, no one's earning any money. You know what I mean? When people are going to the mattresses, you know what I mean? You're not earning money. You know, when you're having arguments with people like that, you're telling me, you know, there's guys driving about looking for you, you're driving about looking for them, and you're telling me you're going to be sitting there thinking about business. You're not. You're thinking about it 24 hours a day. You can't sleep at night. You're waking up in the morning, you know, when you do sleep, and it's first thing you wake up, you're thinking about, well, you know, there's no money in there's no money in aggravation. And at the end of the day, someone ends up getting pinched, or someone ends up getting murdered. You know, no one owns any money out of it. You know, someone gets pinched or murdered, and then you all sit down and have an handshake after all the bullshit. You know, what could have been done? So my father was always like, "Look, let's not do all that bullshit." Do you know what I mean? Yeah, you're a tough crew. We're a tough crew. We can both go at it. We can both go at it. For the next 2 months, but what's the point? Let's deal with it now. Let's sit down and deal with it now. You know what I mean? And work a deal. You know, and I think my father was always level-headed that way, and he got respect for that way. You know.
No, yes, he was definitely known for that, and you could see that you got the same temperament because you could be a tough guy with a lot of people. You're very good with your hands. You're street tough. You've boxed yourself. You represent boxers now, and that's what I'm looking. I wanted to get into that as well. But first, you know, I want my viewers to know, because I have a lot of people that listen to hip hop and big fans of hip hop and a lot of West Coast, that you ran Death Row UK for a while, and you had business with Suge Knight, and you actually came to America over a beef with something, and you left ahead of the game. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it was back in the day. I was working with a guy called Danny Sims. Danny's dead now. Danny was a good guy. He was an Afro-Caribbean guy. Moved up from Mississippi and moved up to New York when he was younger and attached onto the Italians. And the Italians were looking after him. And, I'm going back to the 60s, and you know, when the music came. And Danny ended up discovering Bob Marley. He ended up making being Bob Marley's manager. And when Danny came over to the UK, he had that mentality because he'd lived in New York. He always wanted to have that insurance where if he had a problem, he knew he could pick the phone up to his Italian guys, and he knew he could deal with a problem. Do you know what I mean? It would be, it could be sorted. So when he came to the UK, he wanted the same thing. So someone put him in touch with us, and he reached out. We become partners with him. In the end, we said, you know, we become partners, did a lot of work. And then Mark Morrison, we signed up, we had the number one. And then that evolved into us getting involved in the 90s with Death Row and the States. And then Ori Spado was out there. And we sent Mark Morrison out there. Mark Morrison was a troubled kid. He was just come out of jail. And he's gone out to America to do an album. We got hold of Ori to get him to the studio. You know, and we don't want him getting in trouble in Los Angeles. So Ori looked after him out there. And then the Death Row thing evolved, and we ended up running it was Death Row UK, what it was called, Death Row Europe. But the guy we was working with ended up deciding not to pay Shug $1 million. So there was a big beef. You know, but we collected the money. We collected the money. We made sure the money was sorted out. And
so the guy that owed Shug the million, you went and got it for Shug.
Yeah, we went and got hold of him and said, "What the fuck are you doing? You know, you're so small-minded. We're talking about millions here, and you're looking at taking the small change on the fucking table now. Why are you? You know, it's crazy." So we dealt with that situation, and then now you know, Shug's got to give us some love now, hasn't he?
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, and then it's going, you know, 1 week, 2 weeks, 1 month, 2 months, you know. Well, where's the thank you? You know what I mean? You know,
yeah, and Sugar, sure.
You know, next week I see you. And Sugar was in prison at the time. And then I jumped on a plane and went out there when he was in Sacramento. And then, you know, and I was out there for 3 days and and we got the money. Shug paid us.
No problem. Joey Jr. got on the plane, came to America, and got his end. Right? He went and put the bull on the guy for the money, got the money for Shug. Shug didn't want to pay. But when he got on the plane and he ended up in Sacramento, he's got your end.
Yeah, you know, I don't know about he don't want to pay, you know what I mean? under grand is under grand. You know, and if you ain't got to pay it, you won't pay it. If you think you can get away with not paying 100 grand, you won't pay it. You know, so it just needed a little jog that no, you, this is one debt, this is one bill you have to pay.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, which, you know how I say, right? You invited me to the funeral, and now your daughter's getting married, and I can't come to the wedding.
Yeah, right. That's an old saying. That is, you know, invite me to all the funerals and all the weddings.
Come on, let's. What are we doing here? But see, I love the story because I know it to be true. I heard it through other aspects of the music world with the whole situation when you know, Shug went after Vanilla Ice and hung him off the balcony, and he signed the rights over and. You know, Sugar's doing this and Sugar's doing that. And it's like, listen, I understand. The guy is ruling his, you know, kingdom, whatever he wanted to call it at the time, with an iron fist. And he's got this and he's got that. You know something? I know a few guys from the UK that paid him a visit and they got their end. And they were white and they got their money. So I don't know what all this shit is talking about. And I loved it. I just loved the story. And listen, you guys would have prevailed even more with that Death Row UK, if it just didn't get such a bad name with all the grease that it was picking up here in America.
You know, well, you know, it was, we would have done well with it. We could have done well with it. And it, at the time, but Shug was like, Shug was his own worst enemy. You know, he was, all I can say with Shug, the dealings I had with him, he always done, you know, sometimes it took a little bit of pushing, but he always delivered. Right. You know, he always delivered in the end. And I've only got good memories of Shug, really. You know, maybe there was a delay in him paying us because he was in jail, and maybe it was, or maybe it weren't, maybe. But at the end of the day, everything was good. So, everything was good. But it, you know, with some of the guys, Suge was involved in all them Bloods and all that. I think he was, you know, and he was in all the street guys around him, and he always had them fucking guys around him. You know, and in America, it's funny, like, it's not so much in the UK, but people like a lot of rap stars, they have their manager. And then they have what's called a street manager.
Yeah, the road manager.
and he's the one who keeps all the fucking the punks away from him. You know what I mean? All the people who want to have a piece of his arts. You know, and I knew a few of them guys. You know, but the few times I was up, you know, when he had the offices, Suge had the offices in Wilshire Boulevard.
Yes.
And there was always these fucking guys there, you know. And I used to go up there, and they used to call me the Irishman.
Well, I heard there was another nickname they gave you in Hollywood.
A couple of people said it. Donovan.
Ray Donovan. Yeah, they said that. If you would have stayed in America, you would have been the Ray Donovan version.
Yeah. You know, it was a funny story when we went there and ended up. And there was a guy there, and I was staying with Gary Stretch, the old fighter, boxer. And Gary Stretch was involved with Enrique Inglese, and Colin Farrell, the actor, and these all the guys were hanging about with. And Gary's come to me and said, "Joe, there's a guy, I think it was on Hollywood Boulevard, it was near Hollywood and Vine. And it was a sushi bar upstairs, and downstairs was a recording studio and like club. But the guy had a lot of problems with the street boys, with the street gangs. And he was trying to sell his interest for $100,000. So I went to see him, but I said to Gary, I said, "Gary, when we go and see him, tell him, give me the introduction. Tell him, look, man, fucking made this, I've made that happen in England." So we sit down, I'm talking to this guy. After 1 hour, I come out, the guy wants to pay me to be his partner. You know, now he wants me, "Joe, you got up the club, you know. And I went back to the guys I'm staying with in LA, and I said to them, and they said, "Yeah, Joe, there's a lot of problems with that club, you know that, with the Bloods or the Crips and all that." And you know, I said, "Well, they got problems with that owner. You know what I mean? When I'm the owner, I don't give a fuck. If I own that club, I don't care. You know what I mean? You know, if they would have come through the door with something, I'll meet them with something because it's my club." You know what I mean? You know.
That's a him problem. That's not a your problem.
Yeah. But the guy, you know, it just went, "Nah, it's just not worth the beef, Joe. Just leave it." And so we left it, you know. It was a nice club. It was a nice place, you know.
There was something, Joe, that I've always known about you since we've come with talking and getting a little closer. A lot of people that was in your father's position, and I don't want to put it in a certain way, he was in the rackets, he was a legitimate businessman, he was on the run in America for a while. Actually, he's the only guy I know that was on the lam, and he was living in the public eye. He was actually in the public eye, hanging out with movie stars and well-prominent people and high society people while he was trying to be on the lam. He was living it up. And and you are his son. Now, you know guys like your father, and the era he comes from, and then the era you come from, a lot of sons are putzes. They don't take it in the right way. They take the money and the power and the respect that the father has and thinks that's what the son should get, and they don't earn it. And just the whole thing, how you became this businessman, because you're a boxing promoter, agent, involved in the music business. You have your hands in so many legitimate rackets, and you're still well-respected on the street as well, and your name is well-respected. And just, I kind of want to know about how that fell in, that you were able to take that, because you know better than anybody. You know, the father's son never turns out to be the way you and your father did, and how you turned out to be, you know, the way you are, which is a great businessman and also respected in the streets. Like,
That's nice you say that. It's something which, I think I've got my father's genes inside me. And it's like, I come from a family which comes back from Irish and Scottish roots. My family, like, is very clannish. Like my father's mother, my grandmother, and my grandfather, they were the bosses in our family, even though everyone knows my father. But, you know, when my grandmother went to my dad, get here. My dad, all right, mum, you know. It was. So my loyalty was to my family. It's to my family name. You know, I'm a Pyle. I'm not Joey Pyle's son. I'm a Pyle. Right, it's my family. It's my family. And from an early age, though, I always went, I don't want a mirror. I'm my own man. I don't want to go and be as Joey Pyle's son. And I can't live that life that way. So I mean, I've got to forge my own way in life. You know. But I also knew as well all what my father done, even when he was on death row. He was on death row, so, and they was going to hang him, but he kept his mouth shut. If I turned out to be an arsehole, a prick, people would turn around and go, well, the father couldn't have been that much because the son's a fucking arsehole. Now, I could never disrespect my father with that way. Do you know what I mean? And I would
that's
rather
great,
go. Look,
that's a great outlook. I wish that so many other people would have thought. That is such a great outlook, how to look at it like that.
Yeah, I could. All what he went through in his life, sitting there on death row, if I went the other way, I could bring all of that down. It would mean nothing because the son was a dog. And I haven't got the right to do that. Do you know what I mean? There's no, I can't do that. I couldn't do that. I couldn't do it to him. I couldn't do it to my children. So I always thought, I've got to be my own man. I've got to be my own man and I've got to respect where we come from. And you know yourself, you know what I mean, when you're in the life, you have to make the unpopular decisions. You know, you have to make decisions, and we've all had best friends what we've lost. And I'm not talking about best friends what have died, but best friends where they've made a decision where we've got to turn our back on them. And it hurts.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You've got a best friend and you know, and you look at it like that, you go like, I loved you. And you went and done that. I can't be your friend no more. And, you know, but that's the life we live, you know.
That's why, like, the conversations we always had, how I see other people talk to you and interview you and do things, and they try to talk about your dad. Well, I like Joey Pyle Jr. That's the man, like, your father is who part of you, so it's going to be part of a conversation. But I like Joey Pyle Jr., guy that I'm speaking to, the businessman, how he took on the world and took the business, and with your attitude and with how you look at the things, the way you look at them, is we'd be so much better off in the life where I used to come from if people thought that way. You know, we always had an old saying, well, they do in the life, and it's probably the one I've always hated the most, respect the dog for its master. I hate that. No, let the dog earn its respect. I don't got to sit here and kiss this guy's ass because he's some prince, because his father got a small cemetery. You know what I mean? Killed 27 guys. This guy's never cracked an egg in a food fight. You know what I mean? Like, are you kidding me? Yeah.
You show your respect.
I hated that. Listen, you give respect if they're civilians, if the kids are civilians, if, you know, but that respect the dog for its master, it's probably one of the worst things I ever thought in the life that they used to say. You know what I mean? It was bad. And how you approach it, and that's what I want to know. Like, were you able to take that, knowing what your father had done, living with that name, right? And then also him being on death row. I didn't want to know if you wanted to bring that up, but, you know, it's in books. It's, you know, public knowledge if people have done their history on the UK. But how were you able to turn that into such a legitimate lifestyle, legitimate world, and be successful at it?
I'm thinking a way as well the cops were always, because I was from a family which was known. So from even from a young age, I had the cops on me as well. So I'd have to be a fool not to think. You know, and I was talking to someone the other day, funny enough, and he was talking about it. And I said, when you're known to the cops, Right, yeah, you know, some of these guys, they go around, they're doing things, they carry on doing things, and they carry on doing things too long. And they're going to get pinched. Most, you know, they get pinched because they're doing the life and they're doing something too long. Get your money and get out. And it was like, but what I always just say, like, you know, if you know the cops are looking at you, if I know the cops are looking at me because I'm my name, well, I'd have to be an absolute fool to come out and try and take down an armed security van. You know, and not only a fool, I'd have to be a dog to say to my friends, come and do it with me. Because there's a 50-50 chance that the cops have got an operation, got me under surveillance, right? Just because what we call it in the UK is target. We call it target. And so every now and again, they go, let's go and take a look at Joe. Let's put a week, 1 week surveillance on him, have a look. And this could happen any time a year, maybe 5 times a year, maybe 10 times. And so, like, they could be looking at me, and if I'm out there doing things, you know, it's a 50-50 chance, because if you're under surveillance and you're doing no good, you're going to get pinched. You are going to get pinched. You know what I mean? Yeah.
That's something we call with laying low. When things like that happen, you tell a guy, listen, lay low for a while. You know the guy's hot. Regardless, they might not have a surveillance team on them, but they're watching them. Maybe they be following them. Don't come around. Lay low for a while.
Yeah, you know, so you may, but like with me, I don't know when I'm on surveillance. I haven't got a clue. It could happen. It could happen today. It could happen tomorrow. It could happen next week. So, like, you know, so, and then I got into other things. I got into straight business. Then I was the president, and we created our own union. I created a union, and I went out to see Mike Tyson against Lennox Lewis in Memphis, and I sat on an airplane with a lawyer. A barrister, and we're sitting there for 8 hours talking, and I've sold him about a union, and we've created a union on the airplane, and we had a great time in Memphis, and then when we come back, we started the union, and you know, I was giving speeches in the House of Commons, the Houses of Parliament, and then, but my name come back to haunt me, because what happened was when we had like the committee. We had the union committee. When we started getting big on the committee, people were going, I think the name Jay Parr is stopping people from signing up because they think it's a protection racket. And it wasn't. It was a straight business. You know, people were like, you know, if we get in business with Joe, how do we get out? You know, we can't say next week. You know, this is the way they're thinking. It's crazy, but it's the way they're thinking. They're thinking, if we get in bed with Joe and next week we want to get out of bed, we can't get out. You know, what if he says no? You can't get out. This is what they're thinking I'm going to say.
Why get in? Yeah, and then it chases people away. And, I've had that throughout my lifetime. I've got that now, and I'm not involved in the life. It's like, well, you know what? How about we just leave it alone in general? It's something to not even get involved in to find out if we can or can't get out. And it actually ruins business when you have a name like that.
Yeah, you know, it's cost me a lot over the years. Over the years, it's cost me a lot.
I can imagine. But listen, we know, I know, your father sat down and broke bread with Meyer Lansky. He broke bread with people on the commission, the original commission when it was formed. You know, he came to America on the lam. And he was hanging out with movie stars. He had friends in the Colombo family, friends in the Lucchese family, which, you know, we know you called him up one day. I like when you tell this story. I think he was with a Lucchese captain at the time or something. Wasn't he on the beach on the lam or something, or a Colombo guy? I don't know which one that story was.
Yeah, it was a couple of guys. The guy gave evidence. He was a character witness for James Caan. Remember the movie in The Godfather? Yeah, you know, he was a nice guy. I met him once when I was in Los Angeles, and it was the hottest bar restaurant in Malibu Beach. So my father was on the lam, and he's in this restaurant in Malibu Beach every night of the week with all these wise guys, you know, and having the time of their life, you know.
Yeah, because you have James Caan, who's friends with Joe Colombo. You know what I mean? James Caan hung out with the Colombo crime family, the founding father of the Colombo crime family. And your father's supposed to be on the land, and he's sitting at a table in the it's probably the most expensive restaurant in Malibu with two main guys, three captains, and James Caan. And he's supposed to be hiding out. It's like one of the funniest stories when I heard it, and then I heard it from you, and it was like, you know, Joe, I have so much respect, like, what you're doing and how you turned, you know, your name. I mean, at every turn, you have to fight probably 50% more than the regular guy because of your name. You know what I mean? And then holding it up to a legitimate standard, holding it up to sit at Parliament and talk, to form this union with a prominent lawyer that you did on the plane. I love that story. And, you know, having to sell yourself all the time. And, you know, it gets to a point where, listen, I am who I am. I'm a tough guy. I know who I am. I got to keep explaining myself to John and Jane Civilian every time that I need to sell a union book or a job. Or after a while, it takes a wear on you that, listen, I got to keep selling myself, that I'm not a guy that's going to rob you, that I'm not a guy that's going to strong arm you just because I'm, you know, associated, or you know what, that's just because I'm a stand-up guy, so tough guys look and say hello to me and respect me. That's the only difference, because the average civilian, a tough guy or a wise guy or a street guy, is not gonna go out of his way at a dinner or a restaurant to say hello to, or but with a name like you, and also you're a boxer and you're a stand-up guy, they're gonna come over, they're gonna pay your respect, and you'll gain a reputation just from that. And you never have even probably been in a racket with the guy, you know what I mean? And it hurts you, and I know that, and I've seen it. And
but you know, I've got no complaints.
No, never.
I am who I am, and you know, and I'm not. You know, yeah, it's cost me in life, and you know, but it's made me who I am today. And yes. and my principles. It was a saying I said the other day. I said, money don't make you rich. What makes you rich is your legacy. It's the legacy you leave behind. Is it, you know, that's what makes you rich. It's not like, oh, he left 10 Lamborghinis behind. You know, I'll tell you what made him rich. He left a legacy behind. That man was a good man, and he was a loss to this world. And you know, and I look at things like that, and I think that's what matters more to me. You know, just being, you know, I've got no complaints.
You're your father's legacy. Yours, what he left behind. And you know what? For a guy that was in the business the way your father was, you're probably in the top of the legacies of fathers, like in the same position that your father is throughout the world, other countries, America, UK, Europe, anywhere in Europe, that he left a great legacy behind, because you're living up, like you said. I'm Joey Powell Jr. I represent the Powell name, not my father. I will respect and make sure, and that is a legacy your father left behind, because he taught you and you watched and you learned from that name. And he, now it's your turn to go on and do the same, which you are. You know, your name is, you know, like I said, in business, it's great. I mean, you're doing boxing promote now. And like you said, you know what? The dump truck, it doesn't back up to the grave with the money in it that you made, and dumps it all in the grave and you take it with you. So your legacy is what you have, and it's going to be, you're going to be remembered by. And that's what we're all trying to do here. Leave the right message, the right legacy. You know, and like you're doing right now, like
And for my children. You know, yeah. for my kids, right. My boys, you know.
Yeah. And then he can go on and live up to the name as well as you did, you know, or better. You know, we always want our children to do better than what we were, as your father wanted for you. You know what I mean?
Hey, it's funny, I was watching a film last time, change the subject quick to the And I was watching the boxing. I was watching, and there was a fight on before, and it was boring. It was two light flyweights. Who wants to watch two 7-stone guys fight each other?
Right? Oh my!
Right, yeah, you know, so I'm serious. So I'm channel surfing, and you know what? Come on, was John Travolta, right? Gotti.
Ah.
That film, come on, you know. And I was watching that. I don't know. I thought he was terrible. You know what I mean? Coming across as a bloody street guy.
Yeah, I mean, how do you go from a guy like Amado Sante, who played a wonderful John Senior, to John Travolta.
I was just watching it, and it was like, you know when guys overact, so they go, I'm telling you what I'm doing. I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, if I was walking down the road with that guy, the guy's talking to me, like, I'd go, what are you fucking doing? What are you talking like that for? You know what I mean? Yeah, you know, it's funny though.
You're right. You know what? You're exactly right. And that is that kind of is why I brought it up about, you know, fathers and sons, because you are amongst the ones that stand out, you know?
It's nice, and it's nice you say that, mate. It's nice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Your reputation explains itself. I wouldn't have to explain it, you know what I mean? I can't wait to get to the UK in 2022 so I can get down there and we could share a proper meal together. We actually had your old lady was on one time with us when we were talking. She's hilarious. How's everything going with her? She enjoying her Mother's Day?
Yeah, that's the funny enough. It's not Mother's Day in the UK.
And, oh no!
No, it was last week, and she's in the other room, Esther. And
send her my best. Tell I said hello.
Yeah, I tell her, and funny, and I see a post that it was Mother's Day, and I went, shit. I said, we've just been around my mother's house today, you know what I mean? And I ain't got no flowers or nothing, you know. And I went to, is it Mother's Day? She went, no, you idiot. She went, don't you remember? 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we went round there with loads of flowers and cards. And I went, oh.
That's how busy you are. You couldn't remember 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, you know. And I went, oh, yeah, you remember. Well, you know,
when you told me you were doing the family thing and eating, when we spoke earlier, I was like, oh, take as much time as you need. I would have kind of broke your balls a little bit if I didn't know that it wasn't Mother's Day there. I mean, like, what are you doing? Let's jump on now. I just got the proper meal, that, you know, the chicken, the potatoes, the Sunday meal for Mother's Day. You know, the English meal.
No, it was just funny. A normal day. You know, but it was good, though. My daughter was around there. One of my daughters.
Yeah, but I thought that's when I had spoken to you earlier, until you just said it right now. I thought that you were eating for Mother's Day at your mom's.
So you're thinking Mother's Day.
So when I was talking Mother's Day, I must have been confusing the shit out of you.
Yeah, yeah, I was bloody. Well, when you was actually talking to me earlier, there was so much going on in the background. I was half like, and I was catching every other word.
You know? Oh, I got you.
Yeah, I've got my little grandson, little Nate, Nathaniel was there. And as I was talking to you on the phone, he's going, give me a hug, granddad. And he wants to hug me, right? And I'm going to talk to you, and I've got him there, and I've got my mom over there.
That's funny. I thought it sounded like a Mother's Day dinner. It was all noise in the background, like, I got this guy at a bad time.
the dog's running around. And it was funny that he made me laugh today, because he went to church this morning, my little grandson, and talking about his first Holy Communion. And
that's a beautiful thing.
They told me a day, he said to the father, and the father was talking about, he went, but that's okay, Father, take your time, because I'm not really that bothered about God anyway.
And he told the priestess, that's great.
She said, just take your time, Father, don't worry, it's no big sweat, it's no big deal.
That's the best story of the day. That's the best story of the day right there.
Lovely story.
That's great. I wish if I would have spoke to our family priest like that, my mother would have put me through a wall.
Well, I fell out with a priest. I fell out.
You want to talk like that, you make sure the priest ain't around.
But not the priest now, but the old priest. I fell out. I used to every. You know, I used to go to church and that, but every Christmas Eve, even if I was on my way to a bar or on my way home from a bar or whatever, I would put an envelope for the door, you know, a few hundred bucks, right. You know, every single Christmas Eve, right, the Christmas tree. And then one day, there was a thing about, he actually baptized one of my child, and we was trying to get into a Catholic school. And the priest turned around and I said to him, I need you to sign the form to say he comes to church and all that. And he said, well, I haven't seen him at a church for a few weeks, Joseph. I went, are you bullshitting me, Father? I said, you baptized him. You know he's Catholic. You know I'm Catholic. You know
what I mean? My envelopes know I'm Catholic.
Yeah. And I actually went to him. I said, what, are you shaking me down here? Well, you want more envelopes?
Listen, I'm a Catholic. I don't talk about my religion much on my shows, but I'm a Catholic. It's an extortion racket.
But I went to him in the end. I said, I'll tell you what, I said, stick your letter up your fucking ass. I said, you're getting no more envelopes from me.
Oh, wait, Joey, wait, let me probably get, hold on a second. I started to remember the envelopes.
Yeah.
They look for you. They look for you. That's we call it midnight mass here. And don't worry. Yeah. The father knows, he knows the ones to look for because he wants to make sure that your left side of your pocket isn't so bumpy when you leave. It's a lot flatter because he knows you took the envelope out and put it in the box.
Oh, bloody. Yeah, when they come around with a little patch.
That's great. That is a great story. So listen, I want to know what's going on with the boxing. Are you promoting? Are you representing agents? Like, what are you doing?
Well, at the moment, it's because of COVID. We're waiting to see what happens with all this social distancing stuff, you know what I mean? No one really knows. They're saying in the UK, you know, last night they had 70,000 people in that arena, didn't they, in Texas?
Yeah, we're open.
In the UK, they're still having boxing shows with no crowd.
Really?
So.
You guys got all the pubs open, everything's open. I've seen pictures.
Nah, the pubs are bullshit, mate, honestly. Fuck, he's a joke. Last week.
They're just faking it, they're just acting like it's their own.
Oh, fucking. Last week when we was going to go and watch the Chelsea match, and you can only drink in the pub gardens. And so I got one of my brothers, Warren's, phoned me up and he's gone to meet Joe. He said, he's gone, listen, we're all down the pub. You're coming down. I said, yeah, all right. He's got 6 o'clock. It's hailstoning in London. It's fucking hailstones coming down. And you want us to stand in a pub garden in hailstones and torrential rain watching a football match? And, you're not allowed in the buildings at the moment. So until we find out, we get clarity on this is going to happen, then we'll do something. But I will do some shows again. I'm going to do it.
All right, good. Well, listen, Joe, it was a pleasure having you on. I couldn't wait to get you on. I'm glad you finally fit me in. Sorry about the Mother's Day mix-up. I kind of probably would have got on you a little bit more earlier. But do wish your missus the best for me. Send her my love. Yeah. Tell her I'm late on the Mother's Day, but it's Mother's Day here, so wish her the best for me. And I want to wish all my supporters out there and their families and everybody a happy Mother's Day. And I just want everybody to know, just stay true to yourself. You know what I mean? When people show you who they are, believe them. And with that, Joey, thank you again. All the best to everybody there. And we'll talk soon, my friend.
All right. God bless you. All right.
Sure.
All right. I'll speak to you.
Bye-bye.
It's all right, mate. It's all right, mate.